Hello and welcome to Cannon Fire, the Arsenal Insider podcast. I'm Will Jones, and with us this week is Rahul Akani. And the first thing we've got to get into is last night, where Tottenham Hotspur underlined their own pointlessness as a club by failing to get the result that Arsenal needed them to get against Manchester City. I did watch most of the game. I turned off after the Haaland penalty. I don't know about you, Rahul. Did you sit through the whole painful experience?
Unfortunately, yes. Sat through the whole thing. I was tempted to go to the cinema and turn my phone off and avoid it, but yeah, I thought I put myself through the pain and I regret that.
I don't know what we... Well, I'm not sure I ever expected them to do us a favour, but I did sort of privately convince myself that they definitely, definitely would. And it was a horrible watch and a horrible game. And Heung-min Son scores that any other week, as far as I'm concerned. That late chance. Yeah.
It's one where we've seen him score that goal against us, against City, whenever we don't want him to score, which is every other game we've ever watched of his. He would plant that round the keeper. He'd put it bottom corner. He'd put it top corner. He'd be wheeling away, celebrating. And when he was running through, my heart just stopped for a minute thinking,
this is it. This is the moment. This is the league.
And yeah, as soon as he missed it, I was like, it's done. It's completely done.
Well, we'll come on to this weekend later on in the show, but it isn't done. It isn't done. It isn't over. But the reason it isn't over is because, unlike Spurs, we did do our job and we beat Manchester United. It wasn't a game that's going to go down in Arsenal folklore like the Battle of Old Trafford. But twice before in Arsenal history, in 1998 and 2002, we have gone to Old Trafford during the run-in and won 1-0 and gone on to win the title. So as far as good omens go, it's about as good as they get. But we were not at our best by any stretch of the imagination. Do you think that it was a case of perhaps playing the occasion rather than the game that was in front of us as it was?
I'm not sure about the occasion. I think maybe it was just playing the pressure of... Like, in terms of playing the occasion, you think, yeah, going to Anfield, going to an intimidating atmosphere, going to a Champions League quarter against Bayern. And that's where I think we play the occasion at times. But Old Trafford was a weird one. I think we were miles beyond our best level. But I think in the back of our heads, the pressure on us to win was so high. Just looking at United's form, the United lineup, where they're missing all their, well, the good players, the few good players they have. And yeah, going into that where people are talking about, oh, emptying the stadium again, I thought, no, it's going to be a difficult game anyway. But if we were at our best, I think we'd then go and win 2-3-0. But we were so poor on the ball. And it was just a frustrating watch. But it's one where at full time, I was delighted with the result. Like, the win was the only important thing at this point. But yeah, I'm not sure. I wouldn't say I was kind of intimidated by the atmosphere or by United's aura or just United in general, like Arsenal teams in the past have been. But maybe it was just the title more than anything else, thinking if we slip now, it's the worst thing possible to at this ground against this team.
I know, yeah, there was certainly a sense of playing within ourselves a bit, but it was strange because every time we did decide to play, be it for just a couple of minutes here and there, we cut through them. We looked dangerous. I mean, the first 3 minutes, they could barely get the ball out of their corner. I think it was the right-hand corner flag where Saka and Odegaard were knocking it around. And at that point, I was giddy, thinking, it's going to be 90 minutes of this. And then we just seemed to retreat into ourselves and we were incredibly sloppy in midfield. I thought Thomas Partey was awful, really. I mean, really, he lacked, I felt, a bit of courage in his game. He kept dropping deep, dropping between the centre-backs, looking for the ball, and then not being decisive with it and playing it forward between the lines. He got caught on the ball a couple of times where he hadn't checked over his shoulder before receiving it. There was the Højlund chance about 10 minutes in where Partey tries a turn in our defensive third that just isn't on and gets robbed. And we're lucky that Højlund slipped. It does make me think about him I think there's a fair chance we don't have him next season anyway. I think there's a fair chance we try and move him on in the summer. But there is a frailty, a midfield that's been so good this season with Rice and Odegaard plus another. The biggest games where the pressure's on, everyone has to be on it. That plus another is a problem. The fact we don't have somebody to complete that trio in a way that we're fully happy with, I think is a growing issue, to be honest. And Partey, given his age, given his, not so much his age, but his age combined with his injury record, isn't the solution in there by any stretch of the imagination in the long term. And I thought that was really highlighted at Old Trafford. But to be honest, apart from Saliba, Gabriel, and I think Raya was authoritative and impressive. Nobody, oh, and Trossard, of course, getting the goal, but nobody really stepped up to the occasion. We got away with them being abysmal, and that was enough.
Yeah, I think, well, when we're looking at that midfield three, at Old Trafford, I thought all three of Odegaard, Rice, Partey were nowhere near as good as they normally are. I thought Rice was just, he was barely getting on the ball when Odegaard did, apart from that one turn where I think it was Amrabat, he just sent him flying. But beyond that, he wasn't his usual self. And Partey, I mean, he completed 100% of his passes in the first half. And at half time, I was checking my phone, people were moaning. I was like,
They were very
wow.
safe passes, though.
Yeah, no, they were very safe. They were very sideways. They're not his usual where he breaks through the lines and he drives
No.
it forward. And I think at his best, that's a frustrating thing with the midfield right now. It's Rice and Odegaard, yeah, they're the two there, and you want the third one in there. And right now we don't have the perfect solution. And I think that's what we're aiming to get in the market. We'll come to transfers at some other point. But with options right now, I think Partey at his very best, is yeah. Him in that midfield would be unreal, but that's less than five times a season. He's either injured or then he's coming back from injury and he's off form. Last few games, like, it's been a mixed bag. I think at times he's been excellent, but then when you kind of look at him now compared to at his flying best last season, it looks like he's lost a bit of that, lost a yard of pace. He's looking a bit more sluggish. And I wrote this a few months ago. It's like, if he has just lost his pace, he's 30 and he's had countless injuries to his legs, he has to then adapt his game to become like a Jorginho, who never relied on pace in the first place, never relied on physicality, and just his quality on the ball would help him stand out.
Can
But
you
then
expect
obviously
him to
that,
adapt his game like that, though?
that's the thing, it's like, can he do that when he's 30? He's got ability on the ball, but when even at his best, his best way of kind of playing would be with his strength, his ability to just burst through the midfield, and combined with his passing. Like, I'd say his passing is still amazing, but not Jorginho level to then be able to neglect everything else. And I think he can do it if, yeah, he's got Rice next to him to cover for his legs, and same with Jorginho. But yeah, I think come next season, we're going to need someone different to Partey. And that's why with Jorginho signing extension, I'm very happy with that. I think he's someone you could just throw into any big game, and there's no need for him to settle into the game, or like, he can just come in and switch on immediately.
I also
And
think he's
yeah.
incredibly important off the pitch as well. I
Oh,
think
100%,
it's a
yeah.
squad that lacks real top level experience. I
Yeah.
don't think it's a squad that lacks leadership per se, but he brings more of it to the table.
But yeah, he's one of the key leaders amongst a team where you've got Rice, even Zinchenko's captain Ukraine, Odegaard's captain Norway. You've got Gabriel, is a very vocal figure now. Even someone like Ben White can
I was
give
going
it
to say
out.
Ben White. I think we've seen this season really step up in that sense.
Yeah.
I think as long as we aren't as reliant on Jorginho next season as we were this season, absolutely perfectly happy to have him at the club. I think he's a brilliant part of the squad. We've stretched him very thin
Yeah.
in this season.
He's played something like
If not to
39
breaking
games.
point, right up to it. He's played a
Yeah.
lot of games. He's played a lot of games in quick succession when the schedule's been very hectic. We can't find ourselves putting that on his shoulders again next season. But he's such an important part of the team. And I think he was always going to sign a new contract. We did have the contract extension clause, but I think I'm right in saying he didn't quite make enough appearances to trigger it.
Yeah.
That was the reason it wasn't done that way, but there was never any sense of them not wanting to keep him at the club. So speaking of these midfield options, we've got Everton to come on Sunday, last game of the season. If we thought we were going to be nervous at Old Trafford, then as long as Manchester City don't blow away West Ham in the first half, nerves are going to creep in for us against Everton. They've got an excellent defensive record. They're not going to be a pushover, even though they've arguably not really got anything to play for. Would you go into that game specifically with Partey still in the midfield, but more generally with the same team we played against Manchester United, or did you see enough at Old Trafford to want changes?
I think it's the old cliche, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And I'm normally not a fan of it, but yeah, we've won how many games? Five, six in a row since Villa with the same lineup. And I would just keep it. I think, yeah, you don't change kind of that winning formula. Even though it was an amazing Old Trafford, it still defensively was so solid. And even with Partey having kind of one or two moments on the ball, Rice and Odegaard having a bit of an off day, I still wouldn't change it as such. I think I look back at when we beat Everton 4-0 last season, actually. That was when Jorginho came off at half-time for Partey. And Jorginho had a bit of a nightmare that game where physically he was just overran. And he has a couple of those games where he's coming up against some proper bruisers who just press on him and then he can mostly handle it. But when he can't, then it's a real problem. And then Partey came on in that game and was brilliant. And I think Everton will come in with potentially Andre Onana in midfield, Garner Gray, who is it, James Garner. Like, yeah, they're the kind of midfield who would rough up Jorginho. And so I would just keep Partey at the base with Rice there helping each other out. And yeah, it would help free up Odegaard a bit more as well. I wouldn't then put Jorginho in just for that risk. And I wouldn't change the kind of dynamic that has been going the last few games. I think with United, it was just a case of. It wasn't a tactical failure. It wasn't a lineup failure. It was just, I wouldn't call it failure. We won, but it was, yeah, it was some, it was just a lot of players having
It was
kind of
just a
off
bad
days.
day at the office.
Yeah. And I think
But we
United
got
weren't
away with
that bad that we won it. And I think a better team might have actually punished us a bit more. When Garnacho went on a couple of runs, Saliba then made that brilliant tackle. And even White is someone who's so consistent. He was looking a bit off it as well.
He
And
was
that's how you
White
know
was
when
dribbled past
everything.
five times, I think, which
Yeah.
is astonishing for Ben White.
Yeah, you back him to win pretty much every kind of 1v1. But yeah, Garnacho was really giving him a tough time. And like, it's Garnacho. Like, no offense to him, I think he's a good player, but it's not someone who we'd go into the game fearing in that sense, like it would be for Salah or
Now,
like
be entirely
Sané.
honest, when you saw Anthony come on, how quickly, because this is exactly what went through my head when I saw him coming on, was excellent. Anthony's coming on. Fantastic. Oh God, he's definitely going to score. And this is going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to Arsenal Football Club. And there was a
Well,
moment where he did get the ball and he had his shot from just outside the area. It was an Anthony shot, it was rubbish and straight at Raya. But they have got some quality in that team, and they a Man United team that aren't in such a mess, and so clearly bereft of confidence could probably have punished us. But apart from that feeling of existential dread that I got when I saw Anthony go onto the pitch, I wasn't ever really worried at any point. And I think that is the genuinely remarkable thing about this Arsenal team. We look comfortable with our backs against the wall. We know how to do that. We know how to sit deep. We know how to hold a lead. We've been doing it pretty much whenever we needed to all season. And did you share that sense of relative ease in terms of your comfort watching us for the last 20 minutes or so?
I think I wasn't scared of United as such. It wasn't like I was watching a player kind of, if they had Fernandes or Rashford in there who'd love to terrorize us in the past, I think I would have been. But they were just doing, they we let them have the ball and they did nothing with it in a way. So I wasn't scared of kind of us getting open up and then scoring. I was scared that, given it's Old Trafford, a random handball in there, a random dodgy penalty, a random red card would then send it sideways. And or even knowing United, that like an Antony shot cannons back off Gabriel's head and somehow trickles into the corner. That was what I was scared of. I thought if we have an Arsenal moment at Old Trafford in us, it was going to happen when we're only 1-0 up and without getting the second goal, there's always that fear.
But I think
But
what we
yeah.
saw was a recognition from the players that they weren't having their best day, but they can revert to a formula. They can revert to the basics that they are very comfortable with, confident that they can keep the lead and it'll be all right because they've got the goal they already need. And I think we saw that. I think we saw them actively sort of make that decision, to be honest,
Yeah,
in
when Jorginho and
response to the
Kiwior
fact
came
things they
on.
were trying weren't coming off. So obviously Sunday will decide the destiny of the Premier League title, and we are in the race, but we do need West Ham United to do us a favour. First of all, scale of 1 to 10, where are your hopes for that?
If 10 is, I'm. If 10 is confident that they're going to win and 1 and 0 is absolutely no chance, I'm honestly at a 1. I think West Ham, if they were even fighting for something at the Etihad, I'm
Moisey. David Moyes wants to go out with a bang.
and he's the only one I think who will. I think their players will be on the beach. In recent weeks, their defensive record's been appalling.
They were
And their
decent against
fans have
Luton.
this weird. Not only a weird alliance with City, but weird hatred for us. And that really escalated when we signed Rice, obviously. But I know a few West Ham fans, and then you see them online, and yeah, they none of them are even bothered about West Ham winning, and they'd quite happily see City win it. And obviously that doesn't mean too much, like Spurs, obviously their fans didn't want them to win, as the whole thing of their manager does.
Well, that's
And I
an
think
interesting
we all want
point.
to go out with a bang, but I just can't see it happening.
That's an interesting point. Just going back to last night, obviously, there was an awful lot made about whether Tottenham fans would actually want Spurs to win, what the atmosphere would be like in the stadium, all those sort of things. Obviously, we saw Ange Postecoglou not pull his punches when it came to, I mean, what looked to be quite a frank criticism of the Tottenham fans after the match from him. We do have relatively similar experience to this as Arsenal fans with the Champions League final, but less directly able to impact one another. If the tables had been flipped last night, if in some bizarre parallel universe, Tottenham Hotspur actually stood a chance of winning the Premier League, and we were in the position where we could, by winning, prevent their rivals from stopping them. Where do you think you'd come down on wanting Arsenal to potentially lose a game?
Well, I got asked this at the time. Yeah, so it was the whole week of, I think it was Wednesday was the Europa final of Chelsea, and then Sunday was Liverpool Spurs. I got asked this at the time, and without even a moment's hesitation, I said I'd rather we lose and Spurs lose. It's very different circumstances. I'll come on
Luckily,
to
you've got your
those.
wish.
Yeah, so I got my wish. It was still a horrible, horrible week, but like probably the worst week ever. But. No, I got asked this at the time and I didn't even need to think about it. And it's different to this, but we were in Europa League. I was never a Unai Emery fan. At the time, I was not wanting to hound him out. Like, I don't believe in hounding anyone out, but I was not convinced that winning the Europa League would suddenly send us to a brighter and better future under him. And yeah. It's the Europa League. Like, it's a competition where I've enjoyed some of the away days in there. I've been to like halfway across Europe and it's been quite fun. But for us, when we never even won the Champions League and Europa League that season was the main objective was to get back into there, having bottled top four under Emery, then it would not have been worth Spurs winning the Champions League before we've ever won it.
No,
And
but obviously that
yeah,
wasn't the
there was
experience.
no hesitation from where I thought. I'd much rather lose both, and that's what happened. And I think if we had won both, Emery stays longer, we don't get Arteta, we go further downhill under him, and forever Spurs have won the Champions League before we ever did.
Obviously,
That
that wasn't a situation where we could directly impact
Yeah,
that.
so it's a completely different situation. But I've said to my Spurs mates in the last few days, I get it. I think if I was in their shoes, qualifying for the Champions League once when they've been in it recently, when their team right now, who I think if they were in a Champions League next season, they'd get beaten up and down Europe and then out in the new group stage. And it's not worth then us winning the league as a direct result of them taking points off City, because we would never ever let them live that down. I don't think it's obviously at the same level of us winning it there when we did it twice before. But imagine the first derby next season, and we've got a big thank you Spurs panel or something like that. I can imagine we'll get creative with that. But imagine if they were the ones who, and if they beat City or drew a City, yeah, they would have to beat City, and then Villa won against Palace anyway, then they don't get top four anyway, and we've won the league. And it was a genuine direct impact. It was draw or win, and Arsenal win it. Well, if we beat Everton, it's essentially that. That was essentially the decider for them. And I think I get both sides. I get Ange also not wanting to lose, not wanting his players to lose, and not wanting his fans to
Well,
boo.
the players and the manager were never going to do anything of the
Yeah,
type
like they're
because,
professionals, and
yeah.
the only time I'd ever credit Spurs players was that I thought for most of the game yesterday they actually put a lot of effort in. They're flying into tackles. They actually played better yesterday than they have in most recent weeks I've seen them.
Well, this isn't the Tottenham podcast, thank the Lord. But to briefly comment on their team, they very clearly lack what people are saying we lack all season, which is a proper striker.
Yeah.
Because especially in that first half, so many times they managed to win the ball in transition, had a chance to get up the pitch quickly. Johnson's out on the right, Son's out on the left, and there's no one to aim for in the middle. And nothing came of it. But anyway, they did let us down because that's what they do. And we should never have convinced ourselves we could rely on them in the first place. Now, as we did last week, we are going to end with a quiz. Obviously, this season and this week marks the 20-year anniversary of the Arsenal Invincibles winning the title in 2004. Before I get into that, are you familiar with a 1980s Bruce Forsyth-hosted game show called Play Your Cards Right?
No, honestly not. I know
That's
who was going to be
probably
in it, but yeah.
fair enough. What it is, it's a simple game of higher or lower. So, for instance, if I was to tell you Declan Rice has scored 7 Premier League goals this season, are you going higher or lower for Bukayo Saka?
Oh, higher, yeah.
So, that was play your cards, right? This is play your carnies, right? Quite pleased with that. And what we're going to do is play a higher or lower game when it comes to appearances of squad members in the Invincibles team. I must say, this is appearances in all competitions, not just the Premier League. So, what I think we'll do is we'll give you two lives, maybe three, depending if you burn through them too quickly, and we'll see how many you can get right before you're out of lives. So, I'll start you with an easy one. David Bentley made 8 appearances that season across all competitions. Did Jeremy Aliadière make more or less or fewer?
More.
That's play your carnage, right? That's correct. So, Jeremy Aliadière made 15 appearances. Did Gal Clichy make more or less?
I don't know about him recently. I want to
Remember,
say
this is all competitions, not just Premier League.
all comps. Ooh. I'm still gonna say less than 15. Yeah, I'm gonna say less.
That's one life gone. Please, apparently, I will be honest and say these figures came from a source that I trusted. Clichy apparently made 22 appearances that season. So Gail Clichy makes 22. Did Ray Parlour make more or fewer appearances than that?
We have four, one season. Oh God, it's such a knife edge. I'm gonna go fewer.
That's two lives gone. Ray Parlour made 38.
Oh my. Yeah, I thought that was a season where he kind of was getting phased out a bit. Ah.
So Ray Parlour made 38 appearances as Arsenal became Invincibles. Did the namesake of this game and Nwankwo Kanu make more or fewer?
He only scored one that season, I believe. So I'm going to go again, fewer.
That's correct. Kanu made 24 appearances. Did Dennis Bergkamp make more or fewer than Kanu's 24?
More.
That is correct. Dennis Bergkamp made 38 appearances across all competitions. Did Pascal Sagan make more or fewer?
See, that's the thing. He's one where you think he would have hardly played, but he actually came in quite a lot. I'm going to go fewer, obviously. Well, yeah, fewer in Burkham.
Pascal Sagan made 24.
That's still more than you'd believe. Like,
I think 18 of those were in the Premier League as well.
yeah.
But I could be wrong about that. So Pascal Sagan made 24 appearances. Did the late great Jose Antonio Reyes make more or fewer?
He came in halfway through. I'm going to go fewer.
Reyes made 21. So you're correct. Did Sylvain Wiltord, our hero of Old Trafford in 2002, make more or fewer than Reyes's 21 appearances?
All comps, I'm going to go more, yeah.
According to my figures, Wiltord only made 20, so that is your
Oh.
and you failed to play your Kanus right.
Yeah, it was
I
a
thought that
poor
was a
showing from
decent
me this
effort.
time. There
I thought that was a decent effort.
was a poor start, got my eye in, and then Wiltord is a tricky one. Because yeah, when I speak to older heads and people can correct me if I'm wrong, obviously Wiltord scored quite a few like important goals.
He's got a very decent, like very decent numbers for us.
Yeah, but then the perception of him is that
He
like
wasn't
maybe.
Thierry Henry. That's the perception
Yeah.
of him. It's.
But I think he was a good utility squad player looking back on it. But at the
Oh, I
time, it was
mean,
just they were like, nah, this guy's not great at all.
if you look at some of the important goals he's scored and the times he scored them, it's not a huge leap to draw a comparison towards the sort of impact Trossard's had for us.
I was just thinking that. And people compare Trossard to Ljungberg as well in both numbers, style, scoring
Yeah.
a big game. So like, those are the kind of players you need in a title winning squad who can. Yeah, just come in and out of the team, come across multiple positions. And Trossard, someone I've moaned about at times this season, earlier this season in particular. But what a signing. Just what a brilliant
Fantastic.
signing, brilliant player.
And 27 million from Brighton. I'll confess, when we initially bought him in, not reservations about him as a player in terms of his quality. The way he left Brighton, I
Yeah.
thought was potentially worrying because although he's made himself a regular starter now, that's not what he was bought into the Emirates as.
Yeah.
But he seems to have adapted to the group brilliantly. He's very popular amongst the squad. And what a player he's been. What a player.
I think at the time it was a whole, oh, we're going for Mudryk, and then that didn't happen. And then suddenly it felt a bit, not underwhelming, but just a bit. Yeah, actually, I'll go with underwhelming at a time where we're going from potentially record-breaking signing to a guy who's been frozen out of the Brighton squad.
Well, I
And I
think
did like Trossard at Brighton, but then I thought, well, it was the whole thing of where does he play? He doesn't have a set position. Then it turns out that's a good thing. And yeah, it's just one where the whole build up to the January window for him was him kind of falling out of De Zerbi, getting linked to Spurs. And I thought it's such a red flag. I was thinking whoever picks him up is going to be left with someone who's going to moan. And the last thing we needed was that if he's going to come into the bench for Martinelli and Saka. But no, nah, he's been a brilliant, brilliant signing and one of Arteta's best. Like pound for pound.
If you look at how Arteta has treated certain players who maybe been the cause of some friction in the dressing room. You would assume that he does more than his due diligence to avoid bringing in characters who might have that sort of effect into the team. But equally, there's a lesson to the rest of the Premier League. Do not let Mikel Arteta sign his second choice target. Let him get his first, because he missed out on Caicedo, we pivoted to Jorginho, missed out on Mudryk, pivoted to Trossard. And in both cases, it's impossible to make an argument that Arsenal didn't get the better end of that deal.
Yeah, and even someone like Rafinha, who for me has not been great at Barcelona at all. Yeah, imagine if we got him to kind of block Saka's pathway or block his playing time. It would have, because he can only really play on that right. When he's come onto the left this season, it's not been great at all. And then, yeah, it would have been stuck with him at that price. And even Lisandro Martinez, we've got Zinchenko, who some people know about. But I think overall, he made last season, particularly, he made more of an impact than what Martinez would have done.
And I think he's a more natural fit for this Arsenal team than
Yeah,
Martinez
100%. Yeah.
in terms of his style of play.
And just the experience he brought last season, him and Jesus, I think, just don't get enough credit for they came into a side that just finished fifth and then helped them turn into title contenders as players who have been there and done it. And yeah, people give him stick now, but I think they're way too quick to jump on to who are the two only players in the squad who've actually won the Premier League.
Yeah. Until Sunday, when all the
Until
players
Sunday.
in the Arsenal
Then,
squad
yeah.
will
Then everyone, not
definitely
many.
have won the Premier League. That is an Arsenal insider guarantee. So, thank you for watching. Do the like and the subscribe, etc. And we will speak to you next week, hopefully, as champions.